Are we broadcasting live and well? Thank you, Scott. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kulk. It's approximately 3 o'clock this afternoon, being April 10th, 2013. And I would ask Commissioner Fedorchuk to remind me at the end of this work session that it's my mother's birthday today.
Ooh.
And I still have not called her. I just realized that. Anyway, on that, we're meeting for an informal today on case number PU-13-51. A little background on this. In January, we received a request from Telright Corporation with its principal office in Covington, Georgia, for application designated as an ETC carrier for the purpose of federal universal service support for Lifeline-only services. We put the information out. Anyone requesting a formal hearing must do so by March 27th. We did not receive any requests for a formal hearing, so today we'll be having just an informal. I don't have any other comments, but I'd be happy if Commissioner Crisman or Fedorchuk had any opening remarks.
Mr. Chairman, just to say that I met Mrs. Kulk last summer. She's a delightful lady that deserves a call from her son on her birthday.
Yes.
But let's get this hearing wrapped up before you do that and learn what we can about this new company.
All right. Thank you, Randy.
I have no opening comments.
All right. Thank you, Julie. With that, we're joined by Sarah and Patrick from our staff. And if the folks from the company could introduce themselves, I think we'll turn it over to whoever wants to take your lead.
Appearing on behalf of Telright Corporation.
And push the green button there once for us. Thank you.
Yeah. And Telright is seeking a designation as a Lifeline-only ETC. As you said, he submitted the app in January. And with me is Brian Lyle with Telright Corporation. And Brian can briefly introduce himself, the company, what they're looking to do, and entertain any questions.
Sure. Like Wade said, my name is Brian Lyle. I serve as the president of Telright Corporation. Down in Marietta, Georgia, have been with this company since 2005. Been in telecom all my life. It seems that way. In fact, I think I was born with a bell-shaped head since my mom and dad and aunts and uncles were all Bell South. So it just sort of stuck, and that's where I'm at and where I thrive. So very briefly, Telecom, or Telright, is at heart a long-distance carrier. We have customers all over the country. Last time I checked, we have, I think, 43 active customers in North Dakota. Not a very large presence, but we do have some customers in North Dakota on the long-distance side. You may or may not be aware of the changes and the shifts in telecom, but gradually and increasingly, the traditional core long-distance and home telephone companies are coming or losing more and more customers to the wireless arenas, wireless technology. So kind of seeing that several years ago, we got into the wireless. We have a direct MVNO with AT&T Wireless. Where we market wireless services on a prepaid and a postpaid basis underneath our PureTalk Holdings and PureTalk USA brands. And then we have, in the last couple of years, put our big toe into the Lifeline arena on the wireless side. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Okay. So do you want to go? How are you going to proceed, Wade? Do you want to go through the anything else, or just want our questions? Or
if you'd like more detail, you know, summary okay. of the application, I think Brian can do that. But if there's, you know, we don't need to do that. I think the application kind of speaks for itself. If you guys have some specific questions on, you know, any of the areas, Brian can answer them. But
okay,
it's kind of up to you. If you want kind of a summary, broad level summary of the plans or, you know, any particular area.
Well, maybe let's just go with some questions, and then Pat usually has a few he
sure.
comes up with. But I just had a couple off the top. The commission has done more of these in the last year or so, and prior to that we hadn't, I don't think, done any. Was your plan blessed by the FCC?
Yes.
And when was that?
We received our compliance on December 26th, the day after Christmas of last year.
Okay. So December 26th of 2012,
right.
Okay. And then you listed in your application the states you're doing business in?
Yes.
So was North Dakota part of an initial plan, or is this one of the states that, I mean, how do you evaluate what states to go into?
Well, initially, that's a very good question. It's more of Well, let me go back. We have, when we first got into this particular line of business, we have, for lack of a better term, some consultants that help us dictate where the markets are, kind of the feel of the public service commissions, how they are. We do a lot of research. So we had several A-list states that we wanted to get in initially. We would like to be more centrally located around our core state of Georgia, since that's where we are, but unfortunately...
You know that North Dakota State defeated Georgia Southern badly the last 2 years in football.
Very good. I'm liking that. I'm not a big Georgia Southern fan. For the record, I'm a Florida Gator, so it's...
I digress. Sorry.
That's quite all right. So most of the states that immediately surround Georgia are federal ETC states, so we could not go there.
What was the term?
Federal ETC jurisdiction states, where the Fed... Where the local PSCs or the state basically defer to the FCC to allow companies to market the ETC services, lifeline services. So I'm trying to answer your question. It was a majority of things. We went after some states that we knew initially were very receptive, where there was a substantial population that we could essentially. Try to get some returns relatively quickly, because you may or may not be aware that the whole money flow and the cash basis, it's very cash intensive up front. You're looking at a 9-month minimum before you would get any type of a return on your investments. So it was something that we needed to try to recoup as quickly as possible. But once you got past the initial humps, then there was enough revenue to sustain and keep it going on a perpetual basis.
Okay, so if you will not have any storefronts in North Dakota?
At this point in time, there's no – we don't have any plans for storefronts in North Dakota. There's a couple of ways that we market this, or that you can market the lifeline services. You have a traditional storefront. The larger what I call players in the market, the track phones and the assurance, those are the big 90-pound gorillas out there. They do a lot of direct marketing, and they do a lot of advertising over cable and radio, et cetera. And they deal with the customer remotely. It's calling the customer service, hey, we're sending you a bunch of documents you sign off on, send me the proof documentation that you're on these services, et cetera. And then I'll mail you a phone. That's kind of traditionally how they have done business. We cannot compete with these guys head-to-head, so we had to figure out better ways to do this, especially being a small company. And that, we determined, was to go to the communities themselves, more of a grassroots effort. We have, for lack of a better term, mobile operations, mobile field teams that go into a community. We'd like to partner with churches or food banks or whatever situation we can get into to help set up the events. And we actually go to the community instead of the community having to come to us. We prefer just to go to the community.
On that note, I didn't glean any particular service area of the state that you're looking at. Is you're looking at the whole state? Are you excluding reservations? Or did I just miss that in the paperwork?
We have a service listing area. It's all broken down by zip code. And
okay. I must have missed that then.
That should represent the ATT footprint, ATT wireless footprint.
Okay. So you're going to be trying to mirror AT&T wireless area in the state?
Unless you say I can't do that, yes, sir.
Well, and I think what's interesting is up to this point, they've been pretty much, I'd say they come in and we hear the questions and we've approved all of them. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Julie's way ahead of me.
Well, I printed it and forgot to grab it off the printer.
But that's one of the concerns that that I might have for a work session later on. Maybe you could help answer is that we're sure. Starting to see a lot of these come in, and you know what? How does it work if Citizen X is? Can they sign up for multiple programs?
No, they're not supposed to.
How do we catch that?
There are a couple of initiatives that are going on currently, and one that we are waiting that the FCC to actually put in place. FCC did some major reform overhauls a year and a half or so ago. One of the overhauls that they put in place was a national duplicate database. It has not been put in place yet, so I do not have the ability to dip in to this database and see if customer X is receiving service from carrier A or carrier B or both.
Okay.
What USAC, who administers the program, will do and what they do on a revolving basis, they go into a state jurisdiction and they say, okay, all the carriers who are marketing Lifeline services in this state, give me all your data as of this, give me all your customer detail as of this date. Everybody submits the data. USAC will do a duplicative database search. And then what they will do from that, they will identify customers who have more than one service. They will send letters. They will send a robocall campaign, I believe. And I believe there's also a postcard step in there, essentially getting the customer to realize that, A, I can only have one service. I can only have one service provider, be it phone or wireline or wireless, and that I must either choose a provider or a provider will be chosen for me. So if the customer responds and they select carrier Y, the other carriers, A, B, C, in this, if they had duplicate services, would be told to de-enroll this customer. And then you go through a de-enrollment process. It's kind of a stopgap method to try to get to this national duplicate database.
Let me interject to Pat's expertise on this. How would you envision us? Would we have a role in this as a state? If we've got company X sells Lifeline service to somebody and company Y sells service to the same person, is that all going to be deconflicted out, this new FCC database, or are we going to get involved in that?
The database is supposed to help that resolve those situations. Mm-hmm. The FCC says we would like the states to help us control this. I'm not sure how that would work yet, but the database is supposed to perform a function along those lines.
If I might just add to that, my understanding in North Dakota is they apply through Human Services or Lifeline, correct? Don't they have to, isn't there an application they fill out to qualify for these through the Human Services State to Human Services Department?
The way it's been working in the past is that Human Services would know there are certain programs that the FCC has chosen that if you're a customer and you qualify under some of these other programs, the help programs, then you would qualify for Lifeline. Human Services determines whether those customers, whether those people are qualified for those social service programs. And then when they know that the customer is qualified for those programs, they will say, oh, by the way, you are also qualified for the Lifeline service, and they'll send out a little certificate to the end user saying you're qualified, and take this to your local company or the company you choose to.
Can anybody get the services without that certificate in North Dakota? Are they basically pre-qualifying all these people?
Yes, they are. There's an annual certification, like some of the people that are on social services continue to go beyond social services, and there's an annual check that the Human Services does. And then there's also customers or end users that would come along during the year at some point, and then they would have a special determination whenever that customer applies.
It seems like our Human Services Department would be managing fraud, because they would know if more than one person in a family has the Lifeline.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Well,
these are good questions, because we're just starting to delve deeper into this as a state.
But is your process that you're going, how are you going to identify? Are you going to use the state?
I think you get an individual to go.
What a typical sign-up process is, at our field events, we obviously collect the customer's name and address. We're looking to make sure that they have some form of documentation identifying the particular program that they qualify under. That could be your state certificate, or there are many different pieces of documentation that basically give us an indication that they're in this particular, that they're eligible. We're looking for their customer's picture ID, so we know that we're dealing with an individual that is say they are. But we go a little bit further than all that. We also do direct LexisNexis database dips to try to validate the individual that if I'm seeing John Smith with Social Security ABC or 1234, that there is actually John Smith with Social Security 1234. So we do some extra database dips from a validation standpoint of the individual. We have a interim step that's kind of a precursor to the national database. There's a consortium of companies that have pulled together all of their detail, customer detail, that we go dip into to make sure that they're not a customer of one of these other carriers. We do participate in that. In fact, we're the largest carrier in that particular database, but that's just one little extra step we put in there. And then assuming everything is up and up, they pass all the eligibility checks, they pass all the validation pieces of it, we are obligated to give them service at that point in time, extend service to them. So if you had an eligibility database in North Dakota that we could dip into, we would certainly love to explore that and participate in that. If there's a way that we can identify if these people have service with another carrier, I would certainly love to investigate that as well, because we stand the risk, just by the nature of our business, of losing. Remember, we're not being compensated. We, a company, are not compensated for the handsets that we're providing to the consumer. It's just the service that we're compensated for. So there is a modicum of risk on our end when we extend service to a customer that if they're a duplicate, that we won't be able to receive any reimbursement back from USAC and to cover those initial costs. So we want to try to weed out any kind of duplicate as best to our ability up front, so we do not extend, go over our needs there.
Okay. I just had one more question. Sir. What is the number that our consumer affairs person should call when the questions come?
I have a I have a senior compliance VP of compliance. His name is Jim Carpenter. They can contact him. They can contact me direct. I'll be happy to leave all my contact detail.
Well, just the data. I mean, I think
we have customer service. I mean,
is that in your application anywhere with who?
Yes, there's a toll-free number that you can contact for customer service. Any consumer that we have or any customer that we have can reach customer service by dialing 611 on their phone, coming straight into our call centers.
Okay.
We maintain two call centers, one in Georgia in my switch facilities, and then we have our secondary site in San Antonio, Texas.
So as you continue to expand in the northern area, you'll open up a call site in North Dakota maybe?
There's no plans at this point in time to do that. I cannot talk to that.
All right. That was all that I had. Thanks.
Thank you.
And you, Julie. As I look through this, mm-hmm. maybe I'm just missing them. They're, you know, pretty big list here.
Right.
But I don't see my Grand Forks or Fargo.
Is that...
They're two larger towns.
May I see that list?
Two of the three largest towns in the state.
I should have a copy of it. What these lists are generated from are the ATT service area.
They may not have.
I've hit 102, 103.
All right, so I'm trying to figure out how these were sorted.
Yeah.
And I guess
me too.
The point kind
they're
of
sorted
is,
by rate center description.
What other areas? We've had applications come in to do the entire state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's both ways, but either to do rural LECs, but not the Quest areas, or else maybe it was Quest areas, but not the rurals.
Not the rural LECs.
Maybe both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we had one to come wanted to do all or substantially all of the state except the reservations. So there's a number of different formats, and other than a long list that
right.
isn't everybody, I don't see what your, plan is here.
Well, the plan is typically when we come into an area, it's really going to be dictated by where I can actually provide service. If there aren't enough cell towers someplace and the customer cannot obtain service or it's not very good where they are, then it does none of us any good to actually offer services in that area. So we start with the AT&T footprint, and then we kind of work back from there. Some states and some rural LECs do not like or don't want me to market in their area, so we will take those zip codes out and block them off where we cannot offer services in that area because of that rural LEC has that territory. But the general rule is we will start with the footprint, and if it's a statewide, then we like to try to go statewide, unless there is some objection or some other reason why we cannot go in a particular geographic area.
Okay. And so, you know, you get to a state like North Dakota that right now has a booming economy,
mm-hmm.
and you're not wanting to mass market. You say you want to come in and do towns, community meetings and such. With one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country and such, why would you think there's very many people that even qualify if the rules aren't bent?
That's a very good question. There are going to be some people who do qualify. And I think as a carrier, we didn't want to exclude North Dakota from coming in here. I mean, we've got 17 states currently, and we continue to grow. In fact, I'll be out in Lincoln, Nebraska next month. In front of the commission. So I'm not quite sure Lincoln, Nebraska is going to be our big breadwinner for as well, but there are people in need. So we're going to go to where the people are in need to offer this service. It's if they're small numbers, then so be it. It's small numbers. The investment, since we don't do brick and mortar, is that I just have people on the road and offering the service in this particular area. So there's no real huge investment in order to provide the service here.
This morning I watched actually one of your public service commissioners from Georgia on television lay out a proposal to charge an additional fee on here because of his frustration. Apparently someone in Georgia, and this isn't an indictment of your company necessary, but your industry, I guess.
Right.
That they found someone in Georgia that I believe had 12 of these phones, and someone in
Florida
have
been some abuses.
30 some.
Right.
So why would we? What do you think of his proposal, first of all, and then why would we not view this very skeptically and think, you know, this is just an industry that's building up around an overly generous opportunity that was laid out by the FCC at one point, and until they get a handle on it, everybody's coming in wanting to take advantage.
No, I think the FCC has already gotten a handle on it, first of all. The reforms that they put into place last year, there was waste, fraud, and abuse in the system. You cannot defend that there wasn't. But that number, you know, I've heard numbers at 20%, 25%. Of waste, fraud, and abuse. And I look at it on the other side saying, well, that's 70 to 80% of the people who are doing it right. And the numbers have been growing because the need has been growing. North Dakota may be not the norm here, but a lot of states, the numbers have been swelling in terms of people who qualify for these programs. The reforms that they put in place are really there to eliminate the waste, fraud, and abuse. You have the USAC interim do processes that I briefly outlined before. You have the need to I can get into some specifics, but there's certain signage and certain requirements that we have to follow when we sign up a customer that we must follow, and all the ETCs must follow. Some of that was not in place way back when. They had the link up way back when, which made it a very lucrative to get into. LinkUp is no longer a part of that. So it's essentially a lifeline product where you are paid for the service and reaching out to consumers who may not be aware of it or do not participate in it. And that's what we're trying to go out in the grassroots effort to, make them aware of it. And if that's something they wish to partake in, then we help them try to get service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Randy referenced what's going on in Georgia, your state, and my understanding is the PSC there passed an order that requires Lifeline customers to pay $5 a month.
There is a order that was passed, but there have been subsequent orders beyond that that have added additional proposals. Right now, we're kind of in a wait and see. I believe the current order has a suit that was CTIA filed suit against that order because the state commission is attempting to regulate the wireless rates, which they have no authority to do so, and that's kind of the state of the affairs down there right now. We have to wait till that suit is heard. There are specific rules. I think it's 322, or I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. But they are trying to regulate wireless rates, and they can't do that. Now, I understand what they're trying to do, and I don't have anything negative to say about what they're trying to do, but how they're trying to go about it is really, in my opinion, it's kind of piling on. I, as a carrier, am not for the $5 fee. I've got customers who simply will not be able to afford $5 a month, and that's no joke. I have people who are customers that cannot afford, if I sent them an invoice, cannot afford to pay the extra money to actually send that $5 in, because these are a lot of unbanked individuals. They don't have checking accounts. They don't have credit cards. What they have is a store that can sell them a money order for $10-$12, maybe less, to pay that $5 fee. Yes, that $5 fee comes to me. That's extra revenue to me, but I will lose more customers and more customer base based on that than anything else, simply because they cannot pay. And there was another provision that they talked about, I might as well bring us up, where they wanted to do 500 minutes. $5 or 500 minutes was the latest proposal that came through. The 500-minute piece of it won't fly, only because, you know, I got $9.25. If it cost me $5 to $6 to serve, if someone uses that full 9 or 250 minutes package that I offer them, I'm looking at a $5-$6 bill from the carrier. So if you double that, you can see I'm upside down. I cannot go to a state and offer services in a state where I'm losing money constantly in that state. Therefore, we would have to leave that state. So
500 minutes, what's the rationale behind that?
I don't know. I think it's more.
You get the $5, you're getting people to
right.
have
I
to
think it was,
part of the program. But
I think it was put in place as an either-or to try to mitigate this lawsuit that they're looking at, in my opinion.
But it doesn't seem to require the participant to have any skin in the game, 500 minutes, unless I'm missing
Correct.
Something.
No, they don't. It doesn't.
I thought that was the point of the $5.
The $5 was to have some skin in the game, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you picked North Dakota, you must have done some market research and estimated how many potential customers here.
I have that data. I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but I can certainly okay. provide that to
you. Do
you
have any ballpark?
Honestly, no. I should have looked at that first thing this morning, but okay. I did not. It was on my to-do list, but I got stuck doing other things. But I can send that to you tonight. I can get it when I get back to my office.
No rush.
When I get back to my hotel, which is my office right now.
Right. Okay. I don't think I have any more questions.
I have one more. Now I got kind of mixed up. I thought I understood it, but what do the Lifeline customers pay now?
Nothing. A Lifeline customer, well, all right, let me back up here a little bit.
$1 a month or something?
No, that's in Oklahoma, but that's not even an actual, that's more of an understanding instead of a law that they have to charge them $1 in Oklahoma. There are no states that mandate that we charge a fee, that the customer has to purchase anything. In a lot of states that we've entered into, we were basically, the story is you will give a phone away and you will provide X number of minutes. I'm like, okay, we'll do that. Because they want, it's a service for the poor of the poor. I mean, these folks, a lot of them are just, have made bad choices, I guess, in their lifetime or had no other means. There are some folks who try to take advantage of that, as with any program that the federal government puts out there. And this is really not a federal program. Well, it is a federal program, but it's not supported by tax dollars. But we're taking steps and strides to eliminate that. And the biggest thing is the eligibility criteria that they've implemented. We have to see the customer's eligibility criteria, be it a letter. It's got their name. We have to tie it back to everything. We have to collect the Social Security date of birth, which is all seeding this national database that we want to get into, and then the steps to actually foresee that they're not on anybody else's ranks is kind of the last piece in this. And once those are in there, once all those pieces are in place, your duplicate issue goes away. And it's truly only people who are eligible and who are not taking advantage of their service with more than one carrier. So all the fraud and abuse piece of it goes away. Now, whether you think it's waste, I can't talk to you about that.
I guess I have one other question. What percent of your business is this Lifeline? Is this like your main business model?
It is currently, because it's grown fast, and we've had to put in a lot of infrastructure to keep up with that growth. We do have 30,000 plus customers in the LD world. So, you know, we earn, $5 or $6 million a month on the LD side. Mm-hmm. So I could not support myself underneath my current employee ranks based on my LD business. But I could support myself with my LD business, if that makes sense. I would have to shrink down if the Live Wireless business was not a part of the business, because all the growth that we put in has been to support the Lifeline product.
And are those investments largely staff? Because you said earlier that there's not a lot of...
There's not. We have one store going into Chicago that we're doing. Staff and inventory. I mean, you know, I've got millions of dollars worth of inventory at any given time. And then, of course, carrier bills on top of that, but mostly staff.
You provide the phone for free. And
we
you
do.
Get, so your only income is the $12.95?
$9.25.
From the federal government?
From USAC.
Or from the...
Yeah, it's from USAC. So we get $9.25 from USAC. Our margins are probably going to be depending on 911, state, federal, state taxes, any other local taxes that we get in there. Probably going to be in the 20-25% range. That's my margin. And I've got to support everything from there. It's not a lot.
Okay, Patrick or Sarah?
Aren't you offering other services beyond the Lifeline? Like you can buy texting?
Patrick. Well, yes, there's actually texting. Technically, texting or SMS is not a part of the Lifeline program, but it's been kind of, since it's in the wireless area, it's been kind of one of those things that's been, yes, we know it's there, but it's not technically supported by USAC. But the programs all have SMS capabilities. Except in South Carolina. South Carolina would like me not to offer that, or at least offer a package that does not have SMS capabilities, which we've done for South Carolina. But the two plans that we have currently, the 125 and the 250-minute plans, would have SMS packages. We don't have any data offering at this point in time, even though that the FCC is looking at trying to they've got several pilot programs going on currently to offer data services, but there's nothing been rolled out at this point in time. And how it would be supported, and it's a want right now.
Okay, so they get either, I'm trying to remember how I read the 125 versus the two.
The basic package is rolled down as this. We'll give a customer a phone. The customer can choose between 125 minutes, which roll over. So if they're a small user or a light user, they may want to choose that package. So they'll always have those minutes available to them. SMS is at three text messages per voice minute. That's how it maps out. The 250-minute plan is 250 minutes a month, period. It does not roll over. So your choices are roll over or not roll over when you really boil it down. Now, if you have customers who do like to talk a lot, we have several recharge methods available to them. They could do 1 day, 3 day, 7 day, 2 week, or a monthly unlimited talk and text packages, and they range from $4.95 up to $29.95 or $29.95. So there's, and you have some traditional, what I term pay-go services, $5 for, catch me on the minutes here, I think it's 83 minutes right now, and $10 for 60 and 130 minutes, I believe. So they have various different recharge methods available to them, or they can wait till we recharge on their anniversary date, and they can use the minutes that are given to them for free.
The next month.
On their anniversary date, right.
And so if these are low-income customers, what is your problem with people not being able to pay their bill then when they take?
Well, we don't bill them. It's a prepaid service, and the USAC's basically paying for that service. So if a consumer wants to add additional minutes, they would have to go out and buy or purchase additional minutes. And we try to make it available as convenient to them as possible. So we have – I'm not sure if you're familiar with online – not online, it's not web. I mean, we can do it over the web, but we do a lot of – what's the appropriate term?
PayPal?
I'm having mental blocks here. But convenience stores where they can go buy, you know, PAYGO systems or point-of-sale activation points of sale. And our pens are represented on these point-of-sale so they can go there and buy a pen if they wanted to. So I'll give you, for instance, if I have 250-minute plan and I know I have something coming up this weekend that I'm going to be on the phone all day long, well, I don't want to burn all my 250 minutes. I could probably go through that relatively quickly. If it was my daughter, they'd go through it very quickly. So I can go to the convenience store, and I can do a three-day or even a one-week unlimited talk and text plan. So for $7.95, I believe it is, they could talk for 3 days, all you want, all the texting. I mean, I don't even look at the minutes that you sex bought for. It's just go, go, go. And at the end of that, it turns off, then we put all the minutes back on, and that's what you had to play with.
And so you would set up these point of purchase?
They're already in place.
Oh.
That would be in most of your convenience stores that have these. If, and I can give you the specific providers that we utilize. The largest being Incom. I don't know. It's all telecom prepaid side of the house, but they're a very large provider. And there are some others, ETs. No, I forget.
So we just have contracts with them. They sell it, and then they...
Right. The pens are on their terminals.
Stuff to make it work on that phone.
Yeah, the pen. Well, yeah, I mean, the pens, we produce the pens, and they would sell. It would be... There's a couple of ways you can do this. You have the old traditional hard card. You know, you print out a card with a scratch off on it. It has a PIN number that they dial in, and they have that. This is more of an e-receipt. You know, you buy a $5 PIN from Store Y here. They print the PIN number off, and they can redeem that on our IVR platform. It's all free to the consumer. They don't pay anything other than for the actual PIN itself, of course. But the redemption, customer service, there's no additional fees in there for any of that. So they would get a receipt, and then they could go recharge. And if there is a percentage of the population that are web access enabled, some may actually have a credit card, not a lot, but some, and they do purchase through customer service and on our websites as well. But that's a very small percent. Most of them is going to be PIN-based.
Okay, so I also thought the purpose of Lifeline originally was so that you can, you know, get a doctor or a relative or something like that. What if you are you aware of other states that you're operating in where you might have areas where the service is intermittent and they don't always have? Doesn't always work?
Well, with any wireless service, topography comes into play, strength of signal comes into play. That's why I would not go into an area where there's no footprint from AT&T. I mean, it would be useless. The customer could not use it, and they wouldn't use it. In 60 days, I'm turning them off because there's none usage, et cetera. We've wasted our time and wasted the customer's time. So you definitely want to be in an area where there's going to be service. Otherwise, they won't use it. And for that very reason, I will be turning them off in 60 days. And that doesn't help anybody. So I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well, even if you have service,
right.
And sometimes, you know, you're in a spot where you got a dead zone or something.
Right. And I cannot guarantee that service. And no wireless carrier can or will. But it's pretty good service.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember back when we issued the ETC designation to wireless, Bay Western Wireless, I think, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And Fargo and Grand Forks were MSAs. And MSA boundaries don't necessarily match up with exchange boundaries. And ETC designation is always based on exchange boundaries. And so when we issued the wireless ETC, they had portions, I think, of exchanges that they could serve and portions that they couldn't.
Okay.
And so they had to get some kind of approval from the FCC.
Had a forbearance approval?
Yeah.
And we have forbearance. That's what the compliance plan basically states. You know, Telluride, we got in this initially as a facilities-based carrier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's argument that we argued in many states that we're facilities-based and we have the right to do it all. Well, that's been removed. It's all basically a blanket forbearance where we do not have to meet the facilities component any longer. That's
right.
All been wiped under. The exchanges, all the numbers that we obtain are ATT wireless exchanges. So you get them from a wireless into a wire line, and it gets very murky and kind of difficult to delineate what's what anymore. Because on the old wire line, I can see this exchange was my boundary. You know, well, ATT may have service that's in that boundary, in that area, but I'm buying ATT numbers, so they're not in that carrier's exchange list. So it gets kind of difficult to track it.
But I think, I don't know that ETC designation by the commission has changed any, and so we still have to worry about exchange boundaries, I think. And so we still have to worry about what we had to worry about back when we did the wireless ETCs.
Okay.
We need to worry about that in your application,
sure.
too, I think.
Okay.
So we can't go by what AT&T is designating as exchange boundaries where they can serve, because some of them are only portions.
Okay.
We would actually.
So basically, there might be some areas that we want to exclude from our service list, is what you're saying, because.
Or we should have a map that shows partial exchanges, and then, you know, I think we condition their ETC designation on them obtaining this FCC exchange boundary exception. I can't remember what they call it exactly, but
yeah.
It seems like we have to do that here too, because you're not including Fargo Grand Forks.
And I'm not sure if that's an omission or not, so I definitely want to check on that.
Okay.
And it may, I don't know, and I should know, but I need to verify what that list is and if it's complete.
Yep.
And I think we should probably start there. And I can, there's a database that ATT allows me to look at that identifies their service area by zip code, and that's kind of what I try to pull. But if that's not the complete list, then we have an issue there. We need to.
And I'm not sure it's detailed enough to show exactly where you're going to be able to provide service.
I can get you a map of these rate centers and an overlay of the ATT footprint, if that would be helpful. I'm not sure if that's enough. I've done that in South Carolina and several other states. That's worked for them. Basically, it would be a rate center list where we would be pulling numbers from, and then it's an overlay of the ATT footprint based on those rate centers, and it gives you an idea.
Yeah.
Now, it does not have any rural LEC exchange boundaries on there. That's a whole different ball of wax trying to get that guy produced. That's about a $10,000 plus, which neither here nor there, but, I mean, it's something that doesn't happen overnight.
Well, while you're checking into that, I think I'll look back on our ETC wireless designation and see how that actually was done.
Okay.
And then I'll communicate that with you.
Sure. Thank you.
Another question I have is, you mentioned that this is a prepaid service.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm thinking what you were saying is that the customer doesn't have to pay anything, and so therefore they it's prepaid by the company. Do you get reimbursed in advance or reimbursed in arrears?
After the fact.
So it's prepaid by the company?
We extend the credit to the consumer, and they use the minutes, and then we will go to USAC. It used to be a three-month lag. It's now real time. So the next month is when we get paid by USAC on that.
Okay. Because the reason why I'm asking is because we have a requirement if a customer has prepay services,
mm-hmm.
that you have to have a bond.
Okay.
And that wouldn't apply unless for the services, the extra things that they can buy, are they prepaying for those?
They would be prepaying for the minutes that they buy. So if they wanted to get one of these unlimited cards that we offer or they needed additional time, that would be prepaid. And that's also actually, yes, that would be prepaid.
That would be.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think you would probably need a bond.
Okay.
With a commission. And then that brings me to the other question I had was whether you had updated the registration that you have with us to include local service.
This is not really local. Do we consider this local service? Because we're not a CLEC.
Well, CLECs are
registered. CMRS, huh?
If you are reselling anybody any carrier services, which you would be mm-hmm. reselling, then you would register with us, and then which you have, you have for the long distance.
I'm sure we did and have.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering about if you had updated it to include local then.
Do you know if Andy's done anything on those lines?
No, that he has. We'll double check on that, and if we haven't, we'll follow up and get everything current on that.
Okay, and that's when you'll get into the requirement.
The
bonding. You'll read about the requirement for the bond.
Right. Yep.
That's when you get in there.
Yep.
The only other thing is one of the differences between previous ETC designations and this Lifeline only ETC designation is the that I saw was the requirement that you have to show that you have the financial and technical capability to provide these service, the Lifeline service. And so in the past, I've asked the companies to just tell the commission how that you are financially capable and how you are technically capable to provide.
Okay. Well, being a reseller, as we are in this particular bit, and you have to distinguish between a facilities-based versus non-facilities-based and the forbearance and non-forbearance. Before, we had the capability, we still possess the capability of looping certain traffics through my switch. I have a whole switch matrix in the Atlanta area, fully functional backup power, all AC-DC units, all my critical components are AC-DC, generators, the whole nine yards. I got all that. I mean, we operate as a long-distance company, so we don't ever want to go dark. So we have ability to loop traffic through our switch, and we still do. All the customer service runs through. All the DA would run through our switch still. All international calls would run through my switch still. The only calls that we do not typically run through are the domestic traffic, and that's a cost issue, what it really boils down to. So we have the capabilities and the facilities to actually handle traffic. And if I had to handle additional traffic, I've got SIMs like this one right here that will run 100% of traffic through my switch. It's not something I want to do, but that's what the forbearance piece of it and why we're going on the forbearance, so we don't have to necessarily do this. Financially, I think the commissioner touched on that a little bit earlier, where Lifeline is a big piece of the company now. And if that were to go away, it would be very difficult to support the company in the size that we are with just my LD revenue. We would survive with my LD revenue, but just not in the size that we are. And to this point, I'm not saying that you have to fall in suit, but to this point, we haven't had any other issues with any other states in terms of our ability to support ourselves.
I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Perfect. Julie's got another one. Go
Sorry,
ahead.
And I'll make this brief, but this is our first Lifeline informal, so it's also a chance for us to learn more about it. So we've got a number of companies offering Lifeline here. How do people decide? Like, what distinguishes which Lifeline carriers people pick? Because the services must be kind of identical.
Most of the services are identical, although that will change as more and more competition comes into it. But because we're working off of a fixed revenue stream, there's really so much you can do. No one's really pushed the envelope to go beyond 250 minutes. And there's a theoretical limit that you can go based on the amount of monies that we'll have to deal with playing. So you start looking at, I don't know, types of phones that are offered, but even those vary between technologies, and there's just a lot of variables there. Where they heard about the service, you'll be surprised, a lot of people don't even know about the service. You've got, and I'll mention TrackPhone, and not to disparage TrackPhone, they have a model, and it's worked very well for them, but they typically, when they got into a particular state, they would advertise. They go out and put up a lot of customers, and then they go into a maintenance mode. Well, that customer is going to be there, and there's going to be new customers coming in all the time, and it's not necessarily maintenance mode. So technically, they would get about 25% of the market, and that's kind of where they maintain constantly, boom, boom, boom. Well, the other 75% who are eligible may not have heard this commercial, so they may not even be aware of it still. So that's why we go into the communities, we bring awareness up, and if it's something that they wish to partake in, then we'll be more than happy to comply with them.
Okay, so customer access, basically, get who touches them first, sounds like.
In a lot of cases, yes. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, yes, unless there's just something they didn't like. They may live in a fringe area where a CDMA technology may be better off than a GSM technology. Mm-hmm. So they may, if it's a Sprint backbone network basis or a Verizon backbone network versus AT&T's technology, it may be better suit in that particular area.
Do you have pretty aggressive marketing or unusual? Say you throw people out in certain parts of town and they kind of hit the streets, or
no,
is it
I
more
mean,
conventional than that?
No, it's more conventional. I mean, when we go into certain states, and actually not just certain states, I mean, you may or may not be aware, we have a series of PSAs that we put out, and we've ran just thousands of PSAs over the last couple of years. And I can get you copies of those if you like. But they were professionally produced, and it's basically to build awareness and the rule changes that were going on in the program. So our marketing efforts, I mean, there's the traditional web, and you can do some with newspapers and perhaps radio, but, you know, we don't really do a direct marketing piece. We're not going to go throw out 30,000 pieces of mail to somebody and hope something sticks. But we will go into community, and if it's organized well, it will generate some of its own awareness, or it's going to be an event where there's going to be a lot of foot traffic. So it's not like I have town criers going throughout, you know, hey, come get your free cell phone here.
Right.
But I do have tents that are attractive, and they, you know, they're cookie cutter. They're like franchises that go out there, boom, boom, boom. All my reps are in Life Wireless attire. They're fully credentialed. They've gone through background trainings. They've gone through corporate training. They have specific requirements that they must meet for table layouts and the signage that's being offered to the consumer. As far as safety requirements on whatever power sources that they're utilizing, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. And that's what part of the compliance team is in place to do, to make sure that not only are we following the rules from USAC and FCC, but to make sure that we're following community standards as well. Because, you know, you run into certain communities where they do not want this, and or you have to have certain permits, and there's a litany of things that you go through. But we try to do a more of an organized event, and we will have a lot of people look and go, what is that? And then they may come back around and investigate a little bit further so they can learn about the program that way as well. So, I mean, it's a green and yellow and orange, and it's very well lit up, and it's not some drab tent that you bought from Sports Authority and decided to set up on the street corner and sell something. We try to be as professional about it as possible.
That's it. Mandy?
Thank you.
Do the federal ETC states not allow Lifeline only?
No, they do.
Wireless? Or
they do. It's just very difficult to obtain a federal ETC certificate. It takes 12 to 18 months, and we're kind of in that process and waiting for them to designate more.
And does that cover all those states?
All 10 or 11 states. Yeah, so once I get that federal ETC, then I could start marketing in Alabama and in Florida and in Tennessee, three of my neighboring states. And then there's D.C., there's New York, I think Virginia is one of the states. Maine's trying to go in, as well as Texas, but we already have our ETCs there, so Connecticut.
Okay.
I just thought of one thing. The 925 that you get from USAC, How far out is that quote-quote guaranteed?
The customer for a year, 12 months. You sign up a customer on an annual basis. So each year we have to recertify that customer. That
no, but for you, I mean, for like, what if this all changes? It's going to all change.
Yeah, well, everything, I mean, it's already changed since we got into this. It used to be 10 bucks in a lot of areas, so now it's 9 1/4.
What do we do when we've provided all these services and they change that number to $2? Because it's going to change and it's going to be reduced.
I will say, Mr. FCC, there's no way I can provide service to the consumer at that rate.
Right, but you see what that dilemma that'll create in the states. All of a sudden, all the companies will pull out. But there's no. But when you provide this service, you're going to guarantee it for a year to that customer.
I am. If that customer signs up with me, I am obligated to give them service as long as they want to retain it, and it renews on an annual basis. They could go beyond a year if they wanted
to. But can you pull out before that year?
I am out there to provide service. Can I pull out? I don't know.
All right. Well, that's another day's discussion, but it's just a broader.
I mean, that's not something I've done, so I don't really know what the circumstance would be why I would do something like that.
Lower the amount, and then
if it's totally infeasible. But again, if we had,
it'll be everybody though.
Right. But if I had to say start charging $10 a month for that service to offset the reduction in the fee, those consumers that would meet that would stay on the service, and we would continue to obligate and honor that as long as they were paying customers at that point in time, like we would do with the rest of our services that we offer. It's the ones that could not that I would have to turn off.
Sure. Pat had a comment, I think.
I thought I remembered something in the FCC order that if you become aware of a customer that is no longer eligible.
We de-enroll them.
Yeah. Then they do de-enroll.
Yes.
Okay. Customer. Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, there's many instances where we have to de-enroll consumers.
Sure.
But not specifically what you were asking to.
No. Okay, well, this has been a good, thorough discussion. I'll go on once, go on twice. Randy, do you want to? The way this will probably play out is once Pat tells us that he's got all the stuff he needs, we'll do a quick work session on it, make a determination, and then get it an agenda for a vote. So I think the quicker you guys figure out what the rough edges are, the quicker we can. We just had a commission meeting today, but it wouldn't be out of the ordinary that we could make a decision in 2 weeks, probably more like a month. But because as soon as you guys get it figured out, then we can move on it. So.
Sure.
All right. Pat, one more thing?
One more thing for you, I guess, or for the commissioners. Did you think you want a work session on this?
I think so.
Okay.
If you're speaking for myself, I've done them before, but this is, you can just tell with the number of questions that you got based on the first one that there's just more questions about the whole setup, I think, more so than and just your individual company, the way I would phrase it.
Okay, so
that's with Randy and Julie, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I guess at the point that there's a couple ways to do it. At the point that we get the service area thing resolved and figured out, I can then come to the commission and say we're ready to have a work session with you.
I think so. Yeah.
Otherwise,
it can be as quick as we could schedule a work session pretty quick, and then we could But yeah, as soon as you get the stuff you need to make a recommendation, I think we can have the work session. Okay. Once again, thank you, gentlemen, for coming up here. So we'll close the informal on case number PU 13-51. Thank you all.